it's not here. She doesn't announce. Anyway.
No, it's just for mute and mute. No.
Oh, yeah, what a pity.
Well, we did a little card on the screen telling us that everybody has started.
Which is good. Yeah.
Nice.
Hello, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So, as Tomka said in the first place, the idea will be to, if you could describe the project and what is it about. So, trying to explain this project to someone who's just discovering it for the first time online.
Okay. I don't know, Colm, if how we're gonna do that. I can start a little bit here. Maybe I can say that this project can be seen as a parallel collection. It takes its source in a digital collection from Musée du Cinquantenaire in Brussels, but it could be. It could have a start in any kind of art and history museum in the world, I can imagine. But this one took start in Brussels. And all the items contain an uncertainties vocabulary and its description. And that's how we choose any or every item of this collection. And it can be, for instance, maybe, or may, or must, or peut-être, or vicar, or any kind of word which you put on the database search area, and then you have items coming through this uncertainty. And this is why it's called Collection des Incertitudes, or Collection of Uncertainties. I would say that. Maybe Colm is the aspect to add.
Yeah, in terms of, I guess there's a lot to say about versions and how the project progressed, but we can come to that in a maybe later stage. Just as a collection, these are objects that have been, yes, as Marie said, taken from the online collection from Musée du Cinquantenaire. And we've tried to take those objects and to a certain extent keep their trace or their origin visible as well. So we're not taking just the item that's just the element of phrasing that we're interested in. We're taking actually as much as we can or as much as we think is necessary to highlight these incertitudes and across several languages, across several kind of terms, across several. So it's a very acute observation that Marie came forwards with, and applying it or actually drilling into the collection and finding it has been possible through a few different techniques, but we tried to assemble all of these objects by keeping them relatively or as close as possible to their original formatting. Now, I'm not talking about aesthetic formatting necessarily, but more like categorization and types of objects and the way the objects were described, but as well metadata, as in the way in which the people at the museum decided to number and archive and add identification objects to the images and to the objects themselves. We're specifically with this project interested in the descriptions that have been made, that the actual written descriptions that have been inputted, the readable, human readable descriptions that have been inputted, but there's a lot of secondary information, metadata that's also been kept along with the collection to try and maybe enable a second look, maybe allow for, okay, once this set of uncertain objects has been extracted, are we able to see a new level, another mesh of ways through which these objects are connected, which is definitely an ongoing question.
Can I ask maybe if you could say something about why it was or it is important to pay attention to uncertainties in these collections?
Well, it's also how we start the collection. It was through the workshop in 2016. And when we start to look at uncertainties, it was the idea first about maybe more the term of dates. Sometimes we don't know from when those objects are. So we're looking for this kind of quotation marks or typographically speaking, how we can see a date that we don't know, a provenance or a place where those objects were taken from. And so why it's so important to look at uncertainties, I think it's also because from my point of view, uncertainty is necessary, also in the term of reflection, like why those objects are here in this collection and how we can look at it. Is it just only as an object and, for instance, they're used or their history? Like, is it only a piece of work? Was it also used by people? Like, let's say if it's a fork or if it's a bowl or anything that was useful. But it's also the idea of how those objects arrived. And lots of time we really don't know, and it's not really written that this object or this one was maybe stolen or taken from we don't know who, and we don't know who sell it to someone and then sell it again to the museum, or maybe museum take it from we don't know really how all of this happened. And also we like the collection of incertitude maybe show a bit that more you give uncertainties vocabulary, like it's a nuance in terms of lexicality, it's usually it's not really like object we don't know about. It's really more object we give or like conservator give lots of information about. So it's really more about nuance. But we think it was super interesting to go through all of this probable or possible almost perhaps words and what was just after this kind of word, just also to put or to ask why or what this museum is showing to the public and how the public can then take it back to his own history, for instance. Like, is it really matter? Do we really matter to know only about the color, the form, like description, very rationally, or like a scientist would do it? Or do we need, or would we like as a public to have maybe more information about all of that we don't know about this object a bit? And it's, I think it's important maybe to put this parallel, like this idea of, it's definitely not neutral how we classify an object in a museum, and especially when it's about art and history, like we all know, especially cinquantenaire and cultural places in the world and broader side, it's never places where we can have access to all of the data usually, but since it's online we do. So that's why also it was interesting to do a kind of, I don't know, history of the history of this new metadata available, and to put it also to go a bit further the collection. It's not like a perfect, but we try to go a bit further of only what we see in a way. I don't know if I answer this.
Maybe I can just add a small thing to this as I'm listening to you, Marie, and also remembering like my first engagements with the collection itself, just from a very from a very simple start point, the act of cataloging, the act of entering objects into a database or making a collection of objects searchable through a database, whatever the format, is a very complicated discipline in itself. But you mentioned, Marie, kind of the word neutrality. There's I guess, kind of always an idea of, okay, how many different categories or how many different sort words or keys or descriptors or columns in the table are we going to have to add to achieve a rounded description? And this is a question that all museums are facing or have faced, and it's a very complicated one. And I think in most cases there are interesting results from that and questionable results from that. But by focusing on the incertitudes that this project kind of zooms in on, it's a specific angle through which to see or to be able to look at how the human interacts with these objects, or how the human has still in this very strict grid of naming schemes and organization methods that has been designed to catalog and organize and enable finding of different objects through time codes and descriptors and geography. There is still this quite often generous description written by a human that describes the objects in all the other terms that are not possible to capture in very more scientific or more factual or metadata types of information. The description itself shows the human element. It shows the human that's put in time, maybe taking the pictures of the object and then looking at it and researching the history and figuring out what we know for sure. And then all the elements that are not for sure are a really interesting view, in my opinion, on the person doing the act of cataloging and the things that they were able to say for sure, and in all the elements it points to all of the things that are not possible to say about the object, I think, and that's, there's quite some interest in that, I think.
Maybe also something we tried when we start this project, it's as a classification, as already a kind of tree view, arborescence, we like item has to fit through something, through cases, through lines, through something already exists. So definitely the idea was to find gray zones, and it was easier to go through this kind of lexicality and typographic or any kind of element who can show these uncertainties. But of course, we know that it's really a parallel collection, because those objects, it's not like a true uncertainty collection. We are really playing with this doubt and uncertainties. Also, to show that, like, how do you do if an object is not, like, you cannot classify it, like, your classification as you never think of those objects before, so you cannot put them fitting through cases. So how do you do that in a database for museum? It was a question I think I tried to ask also for the museum during a debate for exhibition version one. And it's same, for instance, for books or objects, where you enter a library, you're supposed to go through a table or through shelf, but sometimes books it's same for museum and object, cannot go through one table or one shelf. He can create a new shelf or a new table, maybe, or maybe he can go to 5 or 10 tables, because it's talk about any kind of thematic and subject. So I think it's important and interesting for this collection to talk about these uncertainties. Even if we try to make this kind of parallel collection, I think it's open more questions that it's still visible through objects. It's like all the processes we worked with, all of this way of scrapping and founding those objects is definitely playing with let's say a just starting golden area. It's a description that curators start to put online through the online database.
I'm like listening to you both and thinking, how do you think the uncertainties that you find around these objects have anything to do with the colonial conditions under which these objects have been acquired? Do you think there's some ghost of that in these descriptions?
It's super hard to answer to that because I'm not sure, and I don't think the item we found are definitely I can't transfer if it's like the more colonial part of the collection, because it's a really huge mix of lots of different objects. It can be definitely sculpture, but it can be also like bowl or objects which are also from Europe. So maybe let's say not from a country, but from a colonial country. I'm feeling that it can be seen as a parallel collection. It can be seen as a definitely ghost colonial collection in terms of theoretically speaking, or in terms of let's say more in terms of process or protocol we start to work with, because obviously you can ask those questions like, where are those objects from? How do we know it's from this country, this region? And we really don't know how the subject arrived. So definitely, if there is uncertainties, it can highlight a bit this. But in another way, some other objects are maybe totally different. So it's a mix. I would say it's a huge mix. That's why also it's interesting, because uncertainties can arrive through colonial question, of course, but also how, for instance, from low and high culture, like which object is important and is not important in a culture? What do we keep? What do we show? So it's really on different level, I would say.
Maybe as an attitude, to frame my response a bit. Having myself joined the project a little bit after an initial research phase, I think I was mostly looking at large data sets as opposed to having much time to look at specific items or individual items that the collection has sort of resurfaced, which is a bit of a lack and something that we're at least from the research point of view for my own self. And it's something that we're actually working on at the moment for this up-and-coming version of the display of this work and the online exhibition, to find ways in which we can give points of view on individual objects as opposed to large 1,000 objects databases or data sets. But something that is maybe connected to colonial attitudes is very much embedded in these uncertainties and certitudes that we're looking at. To give a very just simple example of that, the keywords or word patterns that we're focusing on, there are very in the specifics of the language of each, when they're listed as a collection, all of these stand out as areas that are open for interpretation or uncertitudes or that need to be completed. But to give an example, two words that are quite close, and just to use the English versions as we're talking in English, but probably and possibly are two very different words to use in a description. And if the object that is being catalogued has a history that is questionable, as a person entering data into or cataloging and filing the subject into a data set, the choice of using the words probably is a lot more active and a lot more, and maybe a certain sense, destructive to its history than the words possibly. I just mean that by even, I think this is one of the things that, that the collection highlights, maybe at a level, it's many layers need to be peeled back for this highlight to happen. But when somebody entering a description uses the words probably, within that word there is a certain certitude that that is explained in a way. Yes, I can't 100% guarantee this, but probably. And it hides, we suppose, research and facts and knowledge that backs this up. But the fact that that person chose to use the words probably as opposed to the words possibly or the words might or the word may affirms a certain certainty, which I think in some ways might connect to a colonial attitude. And it's a very macro level of looking at things, but I think that might be a possible way of kind of commenting or answering your question, Femke, is through these very words, there are attitudes that arise, and these are not necessarily to be critical of, again, the humans that I'm talking about that are doing the entering work, but it reveals the whole history of the objects and the things that we know for sure, or maybe the troubled histories. And when each word was chosen to signify an incertitude, there's actually, through this one little word of probably, possibly, might, may, all different degrees of affirmation of certitude, which I think are really important to consider.
To come back a little bit at, let's say, the starting point of the project, you mentioned it a little bit already earlier, but could you say a bit about where did it start, and also where you are now? So in terms of the different versions of your proposition?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe just for chronology, Marie, would you maybe be able to start? And because I joined the project later.
Yeah, so we start with Martin Campillo during the first workshop. And how we start working together, I think it was we start noticing that basically, as soon as you go through item on Carmentis, so Carmentis is an online database, we noticed that you found uncertainties. Basically, the experts would have to say that this item is this, or this item is not this. We start to see that we were a bit against this kind of certitude because we were really looking for all of the objects where we were not sure. And instead of only looking of objects, because we start looking through all of the items with no certainties. We were looking especially for different kind of typographic or archivist methodology or anything that can bring uncertainties. But what we start to found is this kind of like sub-collection through this, all of the keywords we used. But also we kind of start also to see some, let's say, absurdity to find all of this item together. Like, as soon as people would put more information on the item, more we would have uncertainties. So we kind of like this kind of unpolarized debate, or very polarized, because basically we are used to have information like experts saying, "Good, like this item is a spoon, or this object is a very well done a clock, for instance," but as soon as objects had this kind of uncertainties, we felt a bit that putting, for instance, an item from Middle Age close by an object from the 18th century maybe give us a more fluid lecture of the collection. So as we start, I think it was really a reflection on how can we show these uncertainties. And also the idea was to think that we need uncertainty today, we need gray zone, and we need to use all of the digital tools or digital new new spaces available, so through this online collection, to give a new voice or to show a more unseen collection. So it's really not the idea to do a new collection, but really a parallel one, and to show a bit where experts as a possibility or a probable voice. It's really to notice this kind of little space we as a visitor, but also the conservator or archivist, as a little freedom, and how the tool, so basically in the Musée des Cinquantenaires, there is only 84 like artwork, which are the most beautiful artwork from the museum that are alight in the website. So for us, it was interesting to scrap and to go into all the collection, to scrap all the elements. It can be a very super beautiful artwork, or maybe something that the expert doesn't really think it's the most important, but we felt that it would be interesting to mix also a bit this collection to show it in another way, and also to be a bit more reflexive, or to put a more reflexive lecture on it. And when we start, it was also a difficulty of showing words and the keywords, but basically it's evolving, this collection. We could definitely, like, for instance, now we have, like, if we kept probable with column, we're talking about this probably. If we use probable stores, so let's say it can be probable, probably, probablement, and a different word in different language, we have 411 more items for 1 year of adding items from the expert museum archivist. So also it's something we liked it. It's item can come in the collection, but it can came out, and it's like, who has this power? It's not us, it's the archivist, but he doesn't really know about it. Well, maybe they start to know because we met them, but at first they didn't know. So it's also this kind of we emphasize, actually, something which is happening, but that nobody really focus on this. But uncertainty is everywhere in this collection, but it's just not putting visible, so we try to do it a bit.
Can I ask about the like, you talk about a start, like a first intuition almost, and then over time started to build an environment for dealing with this question. So to go maybe through the different phases of the project and how these phases changed and somehow responded to each other's discoveries and experiments. Yeah, like, I'm obviously asking. Echo. I'm asking about the versions in this project.
Yeah. Maybe Marie, I can give a view on this, and you can add in your perspective as well. In many ways, I think the project had quite some key versions or key stages it got to. A few key stages it got to that I think might be worth highlighting, because in itself, the project, the collection really is an observation and a set of initial research through thinking about this language and seeing if that language, from a theoretical point of view, is reflected in the database, and to use the search tools of the database to see if certain uncertain words have been used. So I think the very first version to point out this this collection is really the very first version was a simple collection of words. I say simple, it's really not simple, but was a collection of words. And actually I'm looking at a spreadsheet that Marie and I use at the moment to both catalog and inventory our own processes, our own set of words, and make sure that we're checking for translations, etc. But for me, that's the very first embodiment of the collection. It was very at the very beginning, just an idea, and then that idea got researched and tested, and it created this collection of words. And that's that version has progressed and been added to and been questioned, and some things have worked out, some things have had to be removed either for technical reasons or because because some elements have disappeared or there are too few to make them actual cases. But for me, that's maybe the most important first version, was a collection of words, of uncertitudes, uncertainties. And important to mention that actually within this first version, it's kind of got there's a trio. As I mentioned, the collection exists in three languages because the original database and because of Belgium's setup, there's three languages. So we've got French words because that's the language that Marie and I communicate in. We think in that one first, and then we've got Flemish words, and then we've got English words. So that in itself is already kind of the initial version, probably the most tangible output, or I don't necessarily like the word output, but maybe the most tangible version to look at from the end of the initial research at the work session, the initial diversion work session. And from there, it kind of changed a little bits in that this was always kind of, let's say, the master document, and from there kind of started this whole set of extractions or copies or scrapings or clones from the database. So over the time between the end of the initial work session that I was not part of, but that Marie and Martin did the initial research at, then there were several different attempts to manually extract, or not necessarily manually, but to item by item extract the database elements from Caramente's collection and to start using them. So a second very important version, I think, was all the mock-ups that you created, Marie. That's a bit too designy. I don't mean to call them mock-ups, but more like graphic prototypes, maybe, of how the collection could be viewed and visited or shown, which was super helpful for me to enter. I joined later as a bit more of a little bit from a technical point of view, also clearly very interested in the project of all the people that participated in the work session, but specifically in this one. And from these graphical prototypes, I was able to really understand what I could do. And Marie, I think you were still working a lot with Michael, who was had built a scraper, Michael Murtaugh, who had built a scraper, this kind of tool to programmatically extract elements from the Caramentis database. So you were quite already busy generating scrapes. I'm conscious that that word might not mean all that much to somebody listening to us in a few weeks or later down the line. Literally a gathering, programmatic gathering through a script, essentially. So we would start a little process on our computers that let us query the the original database that we're looking at, and that outputs that creates at the other end a spreadsheet, a CSV file with all the data that we're interested in, plus a little folder on the side with all the other data, all the media data, so all the images. And this was like super instrumental for the development of this collection, and it really brought us to be able to create more versions. We've had to kind of figure out, okay, now we're putting away all the CSV files from the original research, and we'll do a 2019 version of the scraping. So in creating the version, the websites of the collection for the exhibition at Piano Fabrique, it was another set of scrapes. And at the moment, Marie and I are talking about possibly putting those aside or archiving them and creating another set of scrapes for the year 2020. So I think there are kind of different steps of the process and maybe the kind of key versions.
So there's four versions you describe. Yeah. I'm curious to hear from you how these four versions are like responses to each other. Maybe we can talk a bit about the difference between the version that you presented in Piano Fabrique and then now a decision to make another gathering of information to process for the online version. What happened in between?
Just to come back a little bit on what Colm was saying, I'm just thinking also that when we were starting to do this collection with Martin, we had lots of open questions. We didn't know how to put a perimeter all around the collection, so we had choices to make, like the search field, the word, and etc. But the more technical part maybe was this kind of harvest moment where you have to scrap and eat all of this item. So basically, I think also the technical part is quite important in this collection, because in terms of and that's why also there is different version. So it's also answering the two questions. But as soon as we can put the script on, so this script help us to grab together our oral collection from a Carmenti. So each time we do it, we'll have another version of this collection. So it's a bit like, you know, when you are an archivist, there is this kind of word, it's called récollement. So it's really when you have, for instance, you receive a huge archive, you have lots of boxes, you have lots of elements, and you do a first looking at it. And you know a bit the perimeter, you know a bit where, in which kind of archive you are. So I would say that each time we do, we launch a new script, it's also a way of rethinking rethink a bit the perimeter of this collection. So that's why there is different version. We definitely have online and digital collection. That's where all of the collection is a digital born collection. But as soon as there were exhibition or presentation in physical space, like for the version one of the collective project, we were thinking that it would be interesting to have a quick look. Like for instance, with the website, with the platform, you have access to items description, items title, or numbers or information from the website. It's really a selection from the website. We are a bit like this kind of, because there is an authority on this collection first, like this Carmentist expert and authority. It's normal, huh? It's in a way, it's how it works actually, conservator work. But from us, this kind of authority is very systematic. And then I think we have choices. We have images, we have text, we have metadata. So we have lots of information, and we had choices to be made just to show to the public what do we want to show. And from the first time, even with Martin and then also with Colm, we were thinking that images or text out of its context, it's bringing something. It sounds when it's read, all of this probablement une pierre, probablement une assiette, il est probable que cet objet, etc. I mean, all of this description sounds a bit kind of impossible object, or it's a whole object on itself. So we choose to put images a bit together as a kind of like one image, full of spreading with lots of little image all together glue on the website on the left, and on the right you have all of the text. So it's a bit how we deal with the platform, how to keep this kind of relation between image and text, like visual object and reflection or a description, and also authority or uncertainties. So we made a poster because it was a cultural center, and I think a poster or a kind of cloud of image could be interesting to see as a whole, like just to see different period, different objects. But we could do so many different, it's really a tool. And from this digital platform, we can do new objects also, like we can do printed poster, but we can do as soon as a highlight only on one object. We could do, like for instance, we were supposed to show at the library, so I was thinking also to archive like a 1 year version or to do a book for the new uncertain items. So it could be interesting to have also a publication, as conservators do every year in museum, to talk about their collection. But we could do also, and we were thinking to do also a sound, a record of all of this description. So there is really different possibility, and we are still a bit thinking, but I think we'll go for sound and publication from the second version. But we could do goodies also, as any kind of museum do. To play a bit and to activate also this collection, not to be only online, and because we need also to make a bit of explanation and mediation around, I think. Otherwise, it's a bit too difficult or not so easy to understand all of the different layers we are dealing with.
I think that's really the a really good word, activating. That might also be the biggest change for us in the versions and the version we're preparing at the moment. The second last, or the last, the current version, the one that was presented at Piano Fabrique, was the first time that we were able to see all of the objects put together, and to have the lists of words that we were searching for put together in a different way than the spreadsheets that we had been working in. And so in a lot of ways, we were really pleased that it was possible to collect them and show them all. But yeah, we weren't really giving many entry points or giving, in some ways a bit overwhelming, or maybe a bit hard to understand, even though we tried to add a bit of text, as in some maybe more abstract or description text to explain what the collection was and where it came from. This for me is the key thing that we're trying to do in this version that's up and coming. And what has changed is we've realized that the collection is rich, but without giving specific angles, giving specific entry points, making specific selections of our own within the larger database of uncertitudes, then it's a bit hard to understand it. So I think that's the main change, is that we were looking for ways to activate it differently. We were looking for ways to really give new entry points, and that's what Marie is saying about also we thought that that could be done through different types of mediums or media, audio and maybe printed objects as well.
Yes, okay, so that's going to be like the way you give access to the collection. That's where you have been working mainly in the in between the two last versions that you described.
That's right. Also updating it. So it's kind of that's the kind of hidden other thing that we're trying to do, is to make a new collection for 2020. Or not a new collection, an up-to-date collection for 2020, and to see how we can show it.
So maybe I can try to ask the last question, like the DME in preparation tried to formulate it, because it was not so easy. How we didn't really know how to ask you about this, but in a way, in your discussion of probable and possible, and you already alluded to it, Colm. Mm-hmm. So we were interested to talk to you about the relation between paying attention to certainty and how that then somehow confirms or assumes that there is certainty somewhere. And so we wanted to discuss, as the last part of this conversation, a bit how the uncertainties relate to certainties, how they confirm or highlight each other, and how the what in a way is the political work of putting paying attention to uncertainties, knowing that there's obviously certain certainties at work. So maybe you want to, I don't know, think with us a bit about this.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a, not a lot, but it's a big subject to address, I guess. I'm trying to make sure I keep all the elements of your question in my head. Could you maybe say it again, Femke? Just as
yes.
Sorry.
Yeah. No. Don't worry. It is. It's also. Well, it is because we've been together with this project and all of us for a longer time. So it's also been occasions to think about this again and again and again.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I think I can ask this question after talking about the different versions. You have been working on a project that could call attention to uncertainties around the objects, but as you already highlighted in talking about the difference between talking about probably or possibly from a certain region, for example, it's clear that there's a relation between, like, when you pay attention to certainty, it means you you implicate that there is certainty somewhere. So I was curious about how you were thinking about the political work of paying attention to uncertainty and what that does to the certainties that there also are there.
Yeah, right. Thanks. That helps when you rephrased it there. I think I can answer or comment maybe a bit better, because I think maybe going from these indeed degrees of uncertainties, incertitude that the collection highlights, the hope or the exercise that I've had to do myself is to also remind myself that while we're focusing on all these objects that we've extracted that are in more or less ways uncertain, it means that all of the object, well, it could mean that all the objects that haven't been hit by our selections or by our searches, I should say, all the objects that are not in our collection but that are still in the Garmentis collection, then possibly show no attitude of uncertainty. So everything that we have not put in the collection through the various words that we've found or decided to use means, like, all of the flip side, all of the negative, all of the objects mm-hmm. that are left out, possibly, and I'm not going to say this with any certitude, but possibly have a notion of, well, this object, we have a 100% certainty of its history, according to these methods or columns or objects of the database that have been set up in that cataloging process. We are 100% certain that these histories are as we tell them.
But Colm, like, and Marie, both of you, the project puts uncertainty on the table. Not, I mean, in the context of a project that tries to think about what online collections could do for rethinking the relation, let's say the way objects are being owned by these institutions, the way we could somehow work with them in a decolonial way that maybe is not possible in the physical space, but something might become possible in the digital space, question mark, we don't know. So I was wondering, on another level, like, I understand how it works within the collection itself, but the project is as a call for uncertainty. Maybe how does it relate to these kinds of discussions?
Yeah, maybe I can just say something about the word certain. It's a keyword that we kept from the first list we have. So, for instance, I was telling you a bit earlier that it was 652 more probable, but there is only 111 more certain. Okay, there is definitely more items with certain, the word on it, but still, I think it can be seen as a beautiful metaphor of maybe as soon as you add information, as you add more different kind of you have probability, so you had voices, you had different idea, and I would say that all of these extra items are not in this collection for the reason of certain or not certain matter, but as I said a bit earlier, I think it's definitely necessary to have uncertainties, but when we talk about uncertainties, we talk about certainties in a way as a duality, and we, as soon as also we chose all of this nuance of doubt, we emphasize the doubt as something super important right now, especially when we see debates in the public sphere, where it's usually quite polarized, and it's one way or another one, but it's super hard to have something on the middle or something where we hear different voices, like even the multi voices, like different. I think why also this collection can be seen as a decolonial or an idea of changing a bit the authority or the way we can read a collection is this idea of we don't show up a collection that is finished or that is closed. It's really a collection that can be seen as something which is evolving. So it's a bit a metaphor of trying to explain or show or hope that we could maybe have more like concept for experts, for instance, are usually one handler is a one direction, and we hope or we would like it to be maybe a bit more flexible or fluid or in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit hard to explain this in English. I guess it's also yeah, it's not only a flaw. For me, it's also a strength. And I'm not sure today society is really, it's not a habit to be happy with doubt. Usually you have to know stuff. You have to make sure, you have to be sure. It's yeah, certainty is definitely something that is seen as positive, but I'm not sure it's super positive actually. That means also that your choices are made forever, or choices are there, like closed. Yeah.
Thank you, Mai.
Metaphorical. I don't know.
I was wondering outside of the. Sorry, just a last question. So, just in the choice that you made in highlighting uncertainties, well, not in the collection itself, but in the choice that you made, could you maybe try to think or identify of the sort of the certainties that are not being being taken care of with the choice that you made?
I'm not totally sure. I'm not totally sure. Do you mean it? Did it from? Are you talking about? We're asking about the.
So it's sorry. maybe it's maybe a bit broad. It's just looking at like a sort of bigger picture. So you talked about classification and. The way that the objects are being described, and you see all the certainties there, but in like from the very broad picture of this object, like the object itself being there, present, is there in that fact of this object being there, is there maybe you think some certainties that were not being brought up by the collection? Yeah.
Maybe the provenance, like where, how those items has entered the collection, is definitely not there, not in the not in the online collection, not in the data available. I'm sure there is another parallel collection where there is this kind of house information. Yeah, provenance could be super interesting, like how. Like the cost, who gave us, how it was stolen or taken or whatever happened. It's definitely not there because usually you don't know, for instance, I have here probable behind me and it says like probablement d'un retable de l'école d'Anvers. So it's usually what is it, where is it from? But we cannot find information on how it's. How it was taken, how does it arrive there, like because it's not from Belgium, so it's not from Brussels. it's really a kind of meta, all of the meta, like the history of the collection. Yeah, I would say this information is definitely missing, but I'm sure there is definitely more and more. It would be like it would be interesting actually to find different methodology, like scientific methodology, to describe and see what is missing. But because I'm sure it's, yeah, it could show a lot of different layers again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think we have seen in the collection of the African instruments in the Museum for Instruments in Brussels, that there has actually been work done on provenance. So you can see the trajectories of the instruments, where they were bought, for how much, by who, and so on. So that's, I mean, it's not part of the public database, which is really a pity, but there's researchers working with this material. So yeah, I agree that would be a really important shift to allow the public to see these histories of of how the objects arrived, I think they will paint quite a different picture. I think we're now almost an hour, so if maybe you have another question for another group that we are going to talk to tomorrow, and we were wondering if you had any questions about the project Material Realities, that's also been growing next to yours, and no doubt being inspiring and being inspired by what the work you've been doing. So would you want us to bring a question to them? And what is the question?
Well, I have two questions. I don't know if, Colm, you also have some.
Great.
I'm afraid I'm not familiar enough really with the works as a collect, as a whole. And I think Marie would be way better suited to ask questions to her neighbor group.
It's hard to imagine that you haven't seen it, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. I have a view of it from the really nice online documentation that exists, but have not been with it as it progressed or as it is physically, then I probably should just stand back.
Okay. Well, two questions from Marie then.
Yeah, so my first question is, have you ever had e-hair or VR, so virtual reality or augmented reality visit, so it can be in a museum or elsewhere, that has totally blew your mind?
So
that's one question.
Okay, have you ever visited?
Have you ever had a VR or AR visit that has totally blew your mind or your body, because it can be also physical? And maybe it's an easier question. And the second, I feel, is a bit more difficult. So, so what's your idea? What's your opinion of a virtual exhibition and the aura of objects?
Mm-hmm.
Voila. Because I'm really wondering how they are going to deal with the physicality, with the sculpture. Because it was something super important in the exhibition space last time with the Mia cube. And I was wondering how this kind of, I feel like we cannot really have the same feeling when we are, if you are like in front of something totally virtual. But in another way, I was wondering this question of aura because of Lascaux. And when you go to this fake Lascaux, I feel like you totally, you still believe on everything and you're really into an aura atmosphere. So I don't know how, or is it something that interests them? Or is it something they are working on? Or
Okay. We will ask you the question and it will be answered in their conversation. So it means also we will come back to you because we're going to do the whole chain. And then at the end, we will speak to Anaïs. And so we will ask her to propose you a question. So because you're the first one, we'll need to come back to you in a bit. I don't know how to organize it, but we'll find a way.
Yeah, okay.
Sounds lucky to be us. We get to do those.
Also, I mean, I don't know if you are going to be in the showing up in the on Friday in the meeting, because we will be just checking in with people and then also discussing the proposals from Christina and Mia a bit.
Yes, okay. I certainly plan to be at the meeting. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. So this is maybe when we can pass on the question or make an appointment to.
Great.
Ask it, yeah?
Super.
Thanks a lot for all the details and precisions. And Elodie, you have
thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Really
and we'll
be able to talk about it this way.
Yeah, it's very good to have this recorded. So we'll speak again on Friday.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you then. Bye. Bye-bye.
I have to stop the recording.